Good morning, it's 9:06. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network. Well, it's been 10 years since Y2K fears about planes falling from the sky and banks crashing to the ground. The planes stayed in the air. It just took longer than we thought for the banks to crash, and it didn't have anything to do with Y2K. But technology has evolved at an ever faster rate over the first decade of the 21st century. We're going to talk about that this hour. My guest is Larry Magid, technology analyst for CBS News and CNET. He's also the author of MySpace, Safe Online Networking for Your Kids. Good morning, Larry, and welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Well, in 1999, according to an article I read that you wrote, there were no real smartphones. I read somewhere else that the top search engine, well, was something I can't even pronounce. I think it was Inktomi or something like that.
Yeah, Inktomi was the backbone for Alta Vista. That's right, yeah.
AOL was still the number one ISP, and then you had to say Internet Service Provider because not everyone knew what ISP was. People who were putting content up on the web were called webmasters. We've come away since then.
We have indeed. In fact, I think every one of us is a master of our own web domain these days. If we simply have a Facebook account, that makes us a webmaster. So what was once a very specialized profession has turned out to be something that virtually everybody knows how to do and does.
And it's just some do it better than others.
And that's
which
true
reminds
too.
Me, I forgot to update my Facebook page this morning. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, that's terrible. Well, yeah, I suggest you hang up the phone immediately.
Larry, just do a monologue for a few minutes while
I
take care of this. Will you?
Everybody, tune into Twitter. You don't need the radio.
Ooh, wait a minute. there are so many things that we thought were true. I never thought I would miss Windows 98 until I saw Windows ME. But, there were things we thought were true in 1999 that turned out to be pretty silly. And I suppose if we try to predict what's going to happen in the next 10 years, in 10 years, we'll look just as silly. So maybe we'll skip that. But what do you think was the largest or the most important evolution in technology over the last 10 years?
Well, broadband, of course, was enormously important. It's not that it was created. We had broadband before 2000. I think I had my first, it was ISDN, which I actually still have. I use it. I think you're using it right now. I use it for broadcast. But ISDN, I think I had in my house around 1995, and then that was replaced with a very primitive cable modem that was replaced with a very primitive DSL, and I went back and forth. And now the service that I pay for provides me with more than 20 megabits of data. I don't even know how many hundred times faster that is, or thousands of times faster than a standard modem. So that was, of course, an enormous development because it really enabled people not to go online but to be online. And then I think that if you look at it globally, and I'm preparing to give a speech in the Middle East in a few weeks, so I've been looking a lot at global statistics. It's the evolution of the mobile phone. That's really the personal computer for most people in the world. Here in this country, you started out by mentioning smartphones, and that's really where the big growth is. People are carrying around iPhones and Blackberries and Palm Pres and Droids, and these devices have all of the capabilities, or virtually all the capabilities of personal computers that you can carry around with you. In the developing world, they're just getting regular cell phones, but that has enormous market penetration. It's like 4.6 billion of them have been deployed. So that's huge. But again, domestically, I would say that broadband and smartphones are the two things that come to mind. They're probably things I'm overlooking because they're just sort of second nature to me now that if you'd asked me about in 2000, I would have just simply given you a blank stare.
Well, let's talk about some of the technologies that didn't quite live up to the hype.
Okay.
There were a lot of things we were looking at in, say, 1999 that, boy, this was going to be the next big thing, and it just didn't pan out. And I made a joke about Windows ME, but that would be an example.
Well, Windows ME was a step backward. Some people would argue Vista was as well. Of course, Windows ME was a variation of Windows 98 where Microsoft tried to laden extra features on it, which made it more multimedia-like and slowed it down. And that's been a theme from Microsoft and other companies, really, for even longer than the last decade, of putting so many features into things that must have sounded good in a focus group or some kind of research project they did. But when you actually try to use them, it made the conditions worse. So I made with an example, Vista was an example of a product that was very ill-received, although probably got worse rap than it deserved. It wasn't quite so bad, but a lot of people deployed it and didn't have the right hardware, didn't have the right driver, things like that, and had bad experiences. So I think the lesson there is that just because something specs out well and looks good in theory doesn't mean that it's something that people want and need. And I think that I don't know if the industry's actually learned that lesson. It's probably not. We probably have some equally bad, or if not worse, products coming out in the 2000. What are we calling this new decade that we're entering?
Don't ask me the ones. I don't know, the teens.
The teens.
Yeah. Well, I've heard the decade we're just finishing, and let's not have the argument about whether we're finishing.
Right.
Or not.
Right.
The assumption here is. This is it, ladies and gentlemen. This is the last day of the first decade of the 21st century, and some people, I think, mainly the British, are calling the first 10 years the noughties.
Well, they certainly were, but it, you know, it was a momentous time for technology. I mean, again, when you think about how what we were doing 10 years ago, and you're bringing up the Y2K with a perfectly good example, where we had so many fears. That didn't come true, but then we really weren't focused on things that would come true. Obviously, 9/11, of course, was one of them. But even beyond that, if you just look at the tremendous impact of hackers and cyber criminals, back in 1999, when we thought about viruses and hackers, we really weren't thinking about financially motivated criminals. We were thinking about pimply faced teenagers out to make a name for themselves or to have an impact. And now we have a global set of criminal syndicates out there trying to rip us off. Not that I think we should be paranoid. There are things we can do to prevent being ripped off. But the fact that's emerged, I suppose, is a big step forward for the crime world as well.
Well, you know, every time you change the technology, somebody finds a way to pervert it, I suppose you could say. I was just thinking, I wanted to get your take on this. One of the things that I think we saw in this decade was all the new ways that people found to monetize the internet. In the 90s, about the only profit-making sector of the internet was porn. And in this decade, we found, you know, different ways to make money online legitimately. Doing legitimate business have exploded, haven't they?
Well, certainly. I was looking at my MasterCard bill yesterday, and I've done my share to contribute to Amazon.com and other e-merchants. I think this Christmas was a watershed year for the online merchants. It didn't hurt the fact that there was this huge snowstorm in much of the country. But the fact is that we have really gotten to the point where people are comfortable shopping online, and sometimes that's their first option. They see if they can find it online, and then if not, they go out and buy it. So that's been a big change, a positive for the online merchants, and to some extent positive for people, disastrous for many brick and mortar retailers, also disastrous for many state revenue folks, because although technically, at least in California, we are required to pay the sales tax, there's really no way that they can force us to because the stores like Amazon aren't collecting it. And in theory, you're supposed to voluntarily write a check to the state, but people aren't doing that. So it's had enormous impacts in a negative way that way, but certainly convenient for lots of people. That's one big area. The other is there is a small but significant number of regular folks who are making money blogging. Not very many. Most people make little if nothing blogging, but there's certainly the possibility that you or I could set up a blog, put up some Google ads, and get some revenue. And in fact, I do. I don't make a lot of money that way, but I make money that way myself. And it's kind of fun, suddenly going from being a freelance writer to a publisher who gets to control all aspects of his work. And there are some people who are making a good living doing that.
Well, that was one thing I noticed. I went to blogspot.com, and I looked into just setting up a blog because I wanted to see, okay, this is free. What's the gimmick? Where's the hook? And one of the first things I saw when I set this thing up was a button that says monetize your blog.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there are people. I interviewed somebody last week about the rise of Google. 96% of their revenue comes from advertising, and a lot of it is stuff like this. It's
right.
Ads and click-throughs and things like that. And to me, that was a huge change in the internet, say from 1999 to now. I mean, the ubiquitousness of ads and our tolerance of them. I have to say that I don't really notice them that much anymore.
Well, that's because another evolution that took place in the demise of AOL, probably AOL isn't demise, it's still around, but if you remember AOL, they would put ads in your face, not necessarily pop-ups, but every screen you went to had a big prominent ad that you couldn't avoid. Google figured out that it can sort of do more with less. It could make money through advertising by making the ads either textual or relatively subtle display ads, making them contextual so that what you the ad that comes up is relevant to what you're searching for, or in the case of Gmail, what your email is about. And they would still, people would go to them, not maybe in as many numbers, but when you look at the number, not maybe in many percentages, but when you look at the vast number of people who use Google products, enough people click on the ads that there's money to be made. And that was an interesting revolution. I wish more advertisers would take note that subtlety and not being right there in your face can still pay off.
Yeah, and they resisted putting any ads on their homepage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, discipline is an interesting thing with you know, because the common conventional wisdom is fill up every possible inch of space with an ad, and that's even true when you walk around cities these days. I know, I haven't noticed it domestically. It's probably here too, but I know when you enter the underground in London, there's an ad on every step of every staircase, and you sort of can't escape it. But sometimes having a little space without ads can create a comfort zone that makes it possible for the ads that you do have to work.
Well, we do have ads over the urinals now in public restrooms. And,
well, you got a captive audience, at least for a couple of minutes.
Well, you know, whatever. Yeah. We're going to take a break in just a moment, but I should give the phone numbers so people have an analog way to join the program. It's 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number. It's not good everywhere in the world, but most of the places where you can hear this program, you can use that number. And if you can't use the number, you can use our email address, which is talk@wpr.org. Now, here's the question I'm putting to the listeners. What was your favorite gadget that was developed in the last 10 years? What is something that you didn't have in 1999 that you now don't think you can live without? Those are a couple of things we'd like to talk about today. What do you think was the most important technological development of this decade? What technology maybe annoys you the most? Those are all food for thought here on the Ideas Network, where we talk about issues that matter to you and sometimes not. But we're having a discussion about the technology that has developed over this first decade of the new millennium, which really isn't new anymore, I guess, except perhaps in geologic terms. I'm not sure. At any rate, we're talking about it, and you can join us at 800-642-1234 or talk@wpr.org. We'll take your calls on the other side of this break. Stay tuned. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 21 minutes after 9 o'clock, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn today. Here's what's coming up later on the Ideas Network. How many ways are there to say believe me in the world? In English, we say, I'm not pulling your leg. In Russian, the phrase is, I'm not hanging noodles from your ear. I'm not making this up, ladies and gentlemen. After three on Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders, the Gene Faraca, then we'll examine the amusing, often hilarious words and phrases that provide a unique perspective on how different cultures perceive and describe the world. I wonder if they'll say anything about, and Bob's your uncle. This hour, we're talking about technology, specifically all the changes that have taken place in this first decade of the 21st century. My guest is Larry Maggott, technology analyst for CBS News and CNET. He's also the author of MySpace, Safe Online Networking for Your Kids. And before we go to the phones, and we do have a lot of people who want to join us, let's talk a little bit about social networking as being one of the really big deals. I mean, I remember in the 90s, people were connecting on things like Internet Relay Chat, which you hardly ever hear anything about anymore. There was AOL Instant Messaging. We had, I think, ICQ was out. I believe that Microsoft had its instant messaging system, and Yahoo was developing one. Now we've got MySpace and Facebook and Twitter and all sorts of other things that we can use. Let's talk a little bit about how that technology has really changed us as a culture.
Yeah, it used to be we had to talk about online forums, and of course don't forget CompuServe and The Source, Prodigy. These are all online services that were...
Usenet the bulletin boards. In fact, Usenet is still in use, but it's very many people know about it.
That's right. In fact, Google runs a thing called Deja, which allows you to search Usenet. But you're right. I mean, the social networking phenomenon, which hit early in this century with things like Friendster, but it kind of became a big deal around 2004, if I'm not mistaken, or 2003, when MySpace exploded in more ways than one, exploded both in terms of usership, users, and also in terms of media attention, mostly negative, which was why we wrote that book back when we wrote it. God, I think we wrote it in 2006, MySpace Unraveled, because there was so much media attention, most of it negative, and a lot of attention from law enforcement and big worries about predators, and you know, your kid goes on MySpace, and the next thing you know, some stranger shows up at your house and carries them away, all of which turned out to be almost totally untrue. The risk of a person being harmed by a predator that they didn't know before they went online is extremely low. I mean, so low that there are far many more things you need to worry about than that. It certainly got a lot of attention, and MySpace is a good example of a company that got so much attention, did so well, and then kind of blew it and wound up losing a huge amount of market share to a competitor, which, of course, is Facebook. And the interesting thing about Facebook is that it started out, as you know, at Harvard, and then went to elite colleges, and then went to all colleges, and then they opened it up, I think, to corporations, and then high schools, and then everyone. And now, I hardly can think of anybody I know that doesn't have a Facebook account. People of literally all ages. I got an email yesterday from a guy I know who's in his late 80s. I think he might be close to 90 now. And he's on Facebook. And, of course, most teenagers are on. You have to be 13 to have an account. Most teens are on it. So it's really become a phenomenon. It has a population bigger than the United States, 350 million people. And Twitter, of course, is another phenomenon that's getting a lot of attention.
Well, let's talk about Twitter, because there are now, I was listening to, I forget which program it was on Wisconsin Public Radio yesterday, talking about how people are now trying to write books on Twitter.
Yeah. It's funny you say that. I've never written a book on Twitter, but sometimes I tweet conferences. I'll go to a conference and I'll sit there with my laptop and comment on what's going on. And what I have when I'm done, aside from people being either entertained or annoyed by my tweets, is a transcript of what I observed. And I will later go back and turn that into an article. Not sure about a book. That seems like a bigger project, but I know people have done it.
Well, it's what I understand, it's like writing haiku.
Yes.
Because of the limitations of the box. Well, let's go to the phones, and we've got a lot of people with some really great things to talk about this morning about technology, and we'll start with Mike in Madison. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Mike.
The emergence of GPS and the track. GPS makes our cell phones work. It's in the background functioning for every phone call. The ability to track packages. I even know a few people who have used it to track some wandering wives. I think you're going to see the next 10 years, you may see GPS embedded in every license plate or every vehicle. I think it's about to explode.
I'm glad you raised that point. GPS has been an amazing development, and it's, people ought to know, it's actually the government that put the satellites up there. And I remember when I first wrote about GPS, people say, well, what was a monthly subscription fee? I said, nothing. Government's got the satellites. But and I'm glad you mentioned the location-based services. Every cell phone does have a GPS receiver and transmitter in it, or certainly a transmitter, so that someone knows where you are, and it's there for the 911 system. But it can be used to track packages, people, and other things, and it can be abused, as you pointed out, with the wandering wives metaphor. You do need to be aware of the fact that your location can be found. It's not something that everybody knows how to do, and you need permission to do it technically through services like Looped and Glimpse and others, but there are services out there that will allow you to allow yourself to be found. So it can also be a way for people to keep track of their kids or to voluntarily be tracked to make sure that they get to where they're going on time.
We're getting some email as well, so let's take one of those. We have an email from Tanya in Mineral Point who says, I couldn't live without wireless internet at home and my MP3 player. Hmm. They make me very happy. Most annoying are phone prompts that are lengthy and get you nowhere. Well, amen to that.
Yeah, me too. Well, you know, the one interesting comment I want to make about the cell phone and the MP3, we were the last call came in was very clear. I don't know if that was a cell phone or not. It sounded like one, but a good one. But I'm sure as a radio host, you've had to put up with many really crappy phone calls from people. And that's a new phenomenon. I don't remember ever growing up having to say, can you hear me now, as I picked up that AT&T rotary or touch-tone phone in my parents' living room. So while cell phones have been amazingly good in terms of giving us mobility, they have, in some cases, deteriorated call quality. And then you mentioned MP3. That's another example. When I was a kid, we would buy the best possible audio system we could afford. Today, it's all about convenience and portability. So you listen to your highly compressed music through those little white earbuds, and you're very happy about it, and you keep paying more for it. But so we have made some compromise in terms of sound quality with both MP3 and cell phones for the enormous convenience that they bring us.
Well, I believe I'm now on about my fifth iPod. I quit buying them with hard drives in them because they kept failing, but I don't leave town without it, and mostly it's audiobooks. The MP3 player, you know, we are willing to put up with basically lower resolution for some forms of entertainment. Good grief, where some people are willing to watch movies on a 2-inch screen. And I've never quite understood the appeal of that. But it's interesting that, you know, the things that for convenience sake, we're willing to make the trade-off in terms of quality. Oh, you mentioned cell phone audio quality. And I can tell you exactly when that happened, when the cell phone company switched from analog to digital in order to create more cells. Without having to add more capacity to their network, the audio quality went right into the dumper. Mm. Because those old analog cell phones had 10 times the bandwidth of the digital, and they were great. We could use them for broadcast. They were really good. And of course, then we had all those big bag phones and those huge those huge brick phones. But the sound quality was as good as the phone you have in your house. And yep. I remember one of the first people I knew who switched to a digital cell phone. The first complaint he had was that the sound quality was so bad. Well, and that was an economic decision, I think, made by the cell phone companies because they needed to provide more capacity, but they didn't want to have to build it.
Well, you know, one of the things that are become virtually obsolete are pay phones. And I know that because I travel a lot and I'm on radio every day. And when I can't be in a studio, I have to use the phone. And often I have to use cell phones to broadcast because they are simply the only phone that I have access to. And it's just the way it is these days. Remember, we used to be pay phones everywhere, and now even at airports are hard to find, and they're hard to find in hotels as well.
So, and the red phone boxes in London are a thing of the past.
Yeah, there are a few of them that are around for decorative purposes, but basically they're gone. They still do have the double-decker buses, although I heard that those two are in some danger.
Let's go back to the phones and take a call from Bill in Burlington. Hi, Bill.
Hi, thanks for having me. I appreciate the show. Just wanted to say the iPod, and specifically, is the thing that has surprised me the most, but has become probably the one thing that I can't live without, I guess. And how music is stored. You touched on it, that we used to, used to listen to CDs, used to listen to albums, and get a really nice system to listen to them on. Now we're happy to. But it turns out we love the music rather than the equipment, it turns out.
Well, and that's a very good point. And by the way, the next level of that, of course, we love the music and we love our books. And gone soon, not very soon, but gone eventually, will be paper books. I think paper books are going to become a luxury item.
Right.
And most of us are going to be reading our books on something like a Kindle. Kindle was a best-selling product on Amazon this year, probably because Amazon promotes it so much. But the bottom line is that it's a lot cheaper to distribute a book electronically than it is to print and bind and ship a book the old-fashioned way.
Sure.
And I have a feeling that's the next endangered species or books in print.
Bill, what's the most annoying technology?
Yeah, thank you. I'd say the most annoying is the BlackBerry and the smartphone in general. I feel like a Luddite sometimes, but when I see, two or three kids kind of shuffling along behind their parents with their eyes down and nobody seems to be looking ahead anymore. There's a great New Yorker cover by Chris Ware for the Halloween issue or for the October issue that had basically the kids ringing the doorbells for Halloween for trick-or-treat while their parents stood on the street with their heads down on these little lighted boxes that have now come to kind of rule our lives, and we're checking them so often that we're not really looking at life the same way. It's a little sad in a lot of ways. I know it's technology and it just has to march ahead, but I do long for the days when I didn't have to worry about cell phones or emails.
Amen to that.
Well, I had to share a little story here. I lost my cell phone last spring, and I went in to buy another one. And I said, I just what I really want was something akin to the old Nokia 2610. All I want to do is be able to make and receive phone calls. I don't text, I do text because that's how I stay in touch with my son. He prefers that to answering his phone. But I just wanted to buy a phone that I could make and receive phone calls on. I couldn't do it. Actually, this was a bit of serendipity because what I ended up buying was I bought a Walkman phone, and I found I could load songs onto it and create my own ringtones,
yes.
Which became kind of a hobby of mine. But, so that was a plus side. But I still had to pay $200 to replace my phone. And, I said, you have one that doesn't have a lot of gadgets on it because, I want to just make and receive calls. And, well, this was the simplest one I could find. I think I'm with Bill. I'm probably something of a Luddite myself.
Well, I think that one of the things that has suffered again in this last 10 years is simplicity, not just making phone calls. That's one example where the old, just pick up the phone and dial, but also watching television. I remember my daughter once said to me, Daddy, all I want to do is watch television, and because I was giving the family a lesson on how to hook up, how to watch the TV through the audio system. And now my son was very upset the other day because he wanted to watch a DVD, but he didn't realize that the right knob on the receiver had to be turned a certain way. And it's gotten so complicated. I sometimes long for the days when, your TV had a dial that went from channel 2 to channel 13. So the days are long, between the satellite box and the PS3 and the Xbox and the Roku and the Apple TV and the PVR. Yeah, it's great. There's plenty of content out there, but it's sure a different experience.
Here's an email from Don, and I think this is a theme here. The iPod is one of the biggest gadgets for teens. They can't live without it. File sharing is alive and well, too, and I want to talk about that. He says, my daughter is a young musician, and her generation does not think they need to buy music. File sharing is still alive and well, despite the Recording Industry Association of America.
Absolutely. My son is also a young professional musician, even in his 20s, and he doesn't think that recording will ever be the way he makes his money. He thinks that's a marketing tool for his concerts and his merchandise and other endeavors. I mean, the business model has been forced to change, and part of that is piracy, and part of that is other factors as well, but the days of people making large amounts of money selling recordings for all but a very, very few artists are probably over.
Well, when you think about, even CD sales, the people are still purchasing CDs, but musicians make mere pennies
on that.
Where they make their money is filling arenas. and then selling merchandise based on their popularity. So, you know, yeah, the internet is a marketing tool.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right.
And look at what Radiohead did with their last album. They released it online for free. Basically, they said you can come online and download this new recording and pay what you think it's worth. It's kind of like what public radio does.
Yeah.
But they said and people actually paid. I mean, they went to the website, they downloaded it, and they paid, and then they released it in a different way, and people still kept buying it. So I think we're going to see some different ways to go there too.
It's funny, but mentioning the word radio, that's the next technology to undergo a revolution because of the ability to listen to internet radio in the car. We've long had internet radio. I don't know if there are people listening to this program via the internet. It would not be surprise me if you stream. But eventually, with an iPhone, you can listen to internet radio as you drive around, and that's going to have a profound impact on AM stations and other stations that take advantage, that get that kind of a lot of in-car listeners, as portable internet radio becomes ubiquitous. And I think by the end of this decade, every car will have an internet receiver in it. Hopefully, you won't be surfing the web while you're driving, but you will be downloading data, getting audio, perhaps video for the back seat. And it's just going to be, sort of commonplace that when you're out and about, you've got broadband.
Let's take another call. This time we'll go to Kathy in Tomahawk. Kathy, good morning. Thanks for holding.
Yes, good morning. I would not be able to live without my Garmin Nuvi GPS system. And it's not built into my car. It's one that our kids got us for Christmas last year. And we're both retirees, and we like to go, and it's so nice for helping us, get there. But I love it along the way for exploring restaurants and antique shops and, places to stop, points of interest. So it's wonderful.
Well, I'm with you. And one of the things I love about I have a Magellan, similar portable device. And one of the things I like is I get off the main road and start exploring back roads, knowing that at the very least I'm going to be able to find the main road when I'm tired of exploring. So it's really handy in that way.
Exactly. It just blows my mind because lots of times it'll give you the phone number of a point of interest or a place that you might want to visit. And now I've learned, because sometimes you get there and they're not open or they're gone, I pick up my cell phone and call to make sure they're there or open, before we drive off. So it's blows my mind. It's really something. I'm 60 years old, and, you think about the bag phones. You mentioned that before. Or we live in the northern part of the state. When we first got, internet was a possibility. We didn't have local providers, so, our kids would beg. We'd let them go on for 10 minutes, and, it would be a $30 phone bill because it was all long distance. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, and by the way, a lot of cell phones now, especially a lot of smartphones, have GPS, so I have the Magellan in my car, but when my kids are driving around, they just use their iPhones as their GPS device. And that adds even more services, because there are services that can find the cheapest gas because they're online and they know what's going on in real time. So I think GPS is going to get even more and more useful as time goes on.
Kathy, thanks for the call. We need to get to a break, and then we've got more emails and phone calls on this topic. A lot of people interested in this, as I believe we expected that would be the case. Technology is such a part of our lives these days, but maybe more so than ever before in human history. And we're talking about the developments of the last 10 years and how that has those things have changed our lives. My guest is Larry Magid, technology analyst for CBS News and CNET. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9:42. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up later today, after one on Talk of the Nation, author Stephen Landsberg talks about his book of philosophic brain teasers called The Big Questions. That's after one today on Talk of the Nation. This hour, technology is the topic, specifically the technology that has been developed, that has evolved in the last 10 years as we have finished the first decade of the 21st century. My guest is Larry Magid, technology analyst for CBS News and CNET. Before we go back to the phones, another email This one is from Dale in Madison, who says, I work for the UW-Madison IT department, and I would say the biggest technical change is wireless. At the UW in 1999, there were less than 50 laptops online with wireless. Today, there have been up to 10,000 devices online at one time. And I note he uses the word devices because it isn't just laptops that use the wireless internet. Your iPod Touch has wireless internet technology built into it as well. So that's a huge change.
That's right. And it's also come to airplanes. Virgin America has Wi-Fi in all of its flights, all of its planes. American and Delta are doing it in many planes as well. So there's no escape from it. You get in a plane and you can get your instant messages and do your work and be harassed by your boss just like you can when you're on the ground.
All right, back to the phones. We'll go to Mike in Milwaukee next. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. You can hear the impact of technology, you know, when two cars crash together because neither of them is paying much attention to their driving. They got this thing stuck in their ear. I mean, how often have you gone to a stop sign to pull out or to go past the stop sign where the guy isn't even looking in your direction? Got this thing stuck in his ear. This is interesting. And how often have you had to call up We Energies or someplace and go through what seems like a 30-minute menu? I think that in the days gone by, it was probably easier to communicate, and not that people have anything important to say anyway, for the most part, you know. So that's my comment.
Well, you bring up the misuse of technology. There's nothing inherently wrong with technology in the car, having a cell phone in your pocket. But if you're using that cell phone, if you're looking at the screen while you're driving, if you're distracted from the road, as I have been, I've never had an accident because of a cell phone, but I have passed off ramps because I was distracted. And then this misuse of these menu trees by people in the phone. I mean, I'm fed up with that. Seems to me that at the very least you should be able to push zero and get an operator. But the companies think that they somehow can force the customer into going through this elaborate, complicated navigation system to get things. And I don't know about you, I've hung up on many, many of these services because it's just too frustrating. And I don't know what people who have some mental problems, you know, who are maybe slightly mentally retarded or who are very old or whatever, I don't know what they do because some of these things are very complicated.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Here's an email from Carl in New Berlin. I think we're entering the electronic dark ages. All our electronic conversations, letters, movies, books, etc., will be unretrievable. It will be much more difficult to write biographies of famous people.
Mm. Interesting comment, isn't it? I mean, of course, the other argument there is it'll be much easier because you can go online and read a ton of information about them, what they've had to say, what their friends say, what Wikipedia says. But it is true that the paper archives are at risk. There is a project called, I think it's archive.org. They've got something called the Wayback Machine that is striving to archive the Internet, to keep track of at least the public parts of the Internet. And these folks are thinking about that whole issue about how sort of ephemeral digital communications can be if somebody doesn't put them onto a drive somewhere and make sure they're available for future generations. But you're right. I mean, going into an attic and finding the papers of your ancestors, as I have done and many people have done, will become impossible because there'll be no more papers.
You know, going back to Mike's point about the distractions and so forth, I remember in the mid-90s when digital radio was first being discussed and they were looking at the system that's now being used in Europe, where they have quite a bit more bandwidth for digital radio. But I remember they were talking about all the stuff we'd be able to access on these radios in our cars. And I remember sending a message to a listserv. Now, there's a technology that dates me. I sent a message to a listserv that was discussing this. I said, I can't wait for the first lawsuit to occur after someone has an accident because they were checking stock prices on their radio.
Well, now they're probably checking it on their phone, but you're right.
Well, yeah. So
it's really a question of how we use technology and whether it's safety or courtesy. There needs to be some type of an education campaign that gets people to use these technologies in ways that are appropriate.
Well, some states have passed laws banning the use of cell phones and automobiles.
Yeah, or certainly in the case of California, you're not allowed to use one holding it. But I don't think that's the problem personally. I think I can drive with one hand. I can't drive with half a brain. And my problem with my cell phone again is that my mind wanders when I'm on a call and I'm distracted. And it doesn't matter whether it's hands free. So I think we really need to think about what are our priorities. And I was at a restaurant recently, and there was a bunch of people in their 20s in a table next to mine, maybe like a long table full of people. And I would figure of the 15 or so people in that table, at least 8 were texting at the time. And I'm thinking, didn't they go out to dinner to have dinner with each other and have conversations? But maybe they were texting each other, I don't know. But they certainly weren't looking up and interacting, you know, visually with the people around them.
Well, a friend of mine was talking about an experience that he had with going. He was at a Detroit Tigers baseball game in Detroit. Beautiful summer day, lovely weather, perfect day for baseball, which is the greatest outdoor sport. And he's sitting there, and in front of him were 4 teenagers, and during the entire game, instead of watching the game, their eyes were glued to their phones, and they were constantly sending text messages and receiving them. And it's like he says, you know, here we were, this beautiful day. It was a wonderful baseball game in a lovely baseball setting, and these people just weren't really even there.
Well, I'm
sure.
Why
even go?
Yeah, it's sad commentary, and it's an issue. Actually, I write a weekly column in the San Jose Mercury News, and my column on Monday is partially all about it. It's sort of my wishes for the next year, my wish list for 2010. And I do focus on this very issue about how we need to pay attention to people around us, to talk to the people around us. My wife made a very profound comment to me the other day when she was complaining, because I'm guilty of this. I was looking at my BlackBerry while we were having dinner together, and she got somewhat annoyed, rightfully so. And she said, well, at least you and I have had 20 years before the BlackBerry, before this interruption. Pity our daughter and her brand-new husband, for whom this is the norm. They've had no time as a married couple without each of them having their own iPhone. And in their lives, and I'm not criticizing them, but I'm observing, in their lives it is perfectly okay for one or both of them to pull out their iPhone during dinner or, and other interactions, and interact with people outside the room. And my wife thinks that's wrong, and maybe she's right.
Well, we don't take telephones telephone calls during our dinner. When we're sitting down to eat, we don't take phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And we just don't. And it's been a family tradition. I also, people know, don't call me after 9 p.m. unless somebody's dead.
Yeah.
Well, it's just, you know, to me, it's not about the technology. It's about manners.
Well, you're very smart doing that. I'm not as disciplined as you. I can't ignore a ringing phone. In fact, there's one ringing at the moment. It flashes in my radio studio, but it's hard to ignore these phones.
Well, here's an email from Roger who says, home wireless on laptop is his favorite technology. Now he can watch a football game in the family room or be online in bed at 2 a.m. It's great. And one of our producers sent me an instant message saying she thinks perhaps that Roger is single. What's he doing online at 2 a.m. in bed? But, you know, that home wireless, I remember when I got my first wireless G network. Now I'm up to a wireless N. And, yeah, I mean, it really did release the computer from the computer room.
That's right. Yeah, the ability to move about. And, by the way, it's not just Wi-Fi anymore. There is these cellular modems. I have one in my computer, and I can go practically anywhere, certainly in the United States in my case. If you have a GSM, you can go practically anywhere on Earth and access the Internet. And I think that that's going to be a big trend going forward in this coming decade of people having 4G wireless in their laptops. The issue now is to make it more affordable. It's a bit expensive.
Let's go to John in Green Bay next. John, good morning. Thanks for holding.
Hey, thanks. I'm not a particularly high-tech person. I don't own an iPod, and I have, like, the most basic of cell phones. But I have to tell you that I cannot live without my Internet radio. I've got these stations that I stream, you know, like my spiritual home is Texas, so I stream these stations out of Austin. And I really love, the alternative news. And, like, for example, this... this guy from that flew out of Amsterdam that tried to, you know, catch the plane on fire. There is breaking news regarding other details that you'll never hear in mainstream radio or mainstream news that you'll hear online. And then a few days later, when all the news has been vetted and is, you know, certified to be true or whatever, then you'll begin to hear it. But at least you'll hear, you know, the beginnings of a story days ahead of what you'll hear on network or mainstream news. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the call, John.
Yeah. It's amazing the different news outlets out there. I think it was at Twitter, many people got the news, and I was one of them, about Michael Jackson on Twitter long before, or not long, but certainly minutes before they saw it on CNN or heard it on the radio. So we're getting all sorts of ways where citizens are communicating with each other, and in some cases scooping the professional journalists.
Let's see. Let's go to Lowell in Duluth. Lowell,
hello.
Good morning. Yes.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
I'd like to mention TiVo, or digital video recorder. I don't know if you guys have talked about that yet.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Well, we've had a TiVo. We were kind of early adopters. I think we got one about 10 years ago. And I'll tell you, that is an item that I would not be without anymore. It's kind of like the microwave. It's just, you know, once you get one, and the time-shifting ability, you can manage your TV around your life instead of managing your life around your favorite show that's on in the middle of doing something fun other than watching TV.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you can zip through the commercials, I mean, you can watch an hour program in 40 minutes. You know, it's just unbelievable how that's helped our family life out.
I'm not sure how it's helped out my employer that makes its money selling airtime, but I'm with you. I also zap commercials. Don't tell anybody at CBS.
Well, but you know, even with the DVR, even when you're skipping forward, you
yeah.
see the commercial images.
Yeah.
It's not you don't miss them entirely, but it's they. I think what advertisers need to figure out how to do is to put their message into a 1 second visual. But we got a DVR when we got a satellite dish a few years ago, and Lowell, I agree with you. That's one thing. That's one luxury that I'll give up some favorite food item if I have to. But I'm
absolutely.
We DVR our favorite programs, and we only watch them on Friday nights, and so that cuts down on our TV viewing during the rest
exactly.
of the week in terms of
exactly.
time spent in front of the tube.
I don't even know when some of my favorite shows are on the air. I literally there are a couple of shows I watch, and I don't know what night they're on. All I know is that when I turn on my satellite dish PVR. When I turn it on, it's there, and I watch it. So it's completely changed the whole notion of being glued to a schedule for watching TV. And of course, now the other phenomenon is internet television. There are services like Hulu. My daughter canceled her cable subscription, and she watches most of her programs on Hulu now. Not to mention YouTube. That's another thing of this decade is YouTube, which is a...
Everybody can be a star.
Everybody can be a star, or a fool, or both.
Well, and there's certainly no shortage of fools. I've never been on a talk show when we got as much email as we're getting on this one, which makes sense. Here's one that I wanted to make sure we get in, and we're running out of time here. Joe in Green Bay writes, caller ID makes it possible for us to always know who is calling. We tend to only pick up calls that we know are for us and to avoid other calls. The result is less interaction and small talk, which I like, but many people seem to miss. Caller ID, that was a huge development. I think that came before this decade, but it's certainly widely used now.
You know, I have to confess, well, a few minutes ago when I mentioned my phone was ringing or flashing, I looked at the caller ID, and it was CBS News, and I said I can't ignore a ringing phone. But I didn't miss a beat. I actually sent them an instant message to find out what it was about. I've got another show at 11 o'clock Eastern. But the point is that caller ID has allowed you to do that. It's also, of course, allowed you to ignore people. And sometimes when I make a call and it doesn't get picked up, I take it personally because I assume that the person knows who I am and decided they don't want to talk to me. So I guess it's one of those double-edged swords.
Well, and there's a lot that we didn't even get to. People wanting to talk about a technology has made it possible for them to work anywhere. Another person emailing about, the politics of technology, the Iran protests, the Twitters that came out of Iran, or the tweets that came out of Iran, what would have happened in Guinea if everyone had had a personal video recorder when the army was shooting civilians and so forth. We're going to continue our discussion of things that happened in this decade in the next hour, so you might want to hang on. We may get to some of those issues then. But for now, we need to bring this discussion to a close. We've got about 30 seconds. You care to go on a limb, go out on a limb a little bit and suggest what the next big trend will be?
Well, I think that the continuation of mobile, I can't say, I don't know if it's a new trend or a continuation trend, but the embedding of mobile radios into virtually everything that we own, and also the embedding of screens and microprocessors, clothing that will basically be an LCD screen that will change depending upon your mood or your situation, that's
wow.
going to be here certainly by the end of the 20s.
And we have to leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us today. It's been a fun hour.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Larry Mega, technology analyst for CBS News and CNET. This program was produced by Rhonda Fanning. Erica Janik handled on-air production today. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.